I wasn't sure what to talk about today. So little happened this week, just one of those ho-hum kind of weeks. Actually, today's sermon is a little longer than I usually preach on a communion Sunday, or any Sunday, really. But it's a special Sunday, and a lot needs to be said. And so I'm sorry for its unusual length. Before I focus on the United Methodist General Conference that was held in St. Louis, I want to share that there were a number of national news stories that were a bit misleading. The story showed pictures of people picketing, carrying signs with horrific messages on them about LGBTQ people. Those picketers were not Methodist. They were members of a group that goes around the country spouting out hate messages at certain events. They've come to Savannah on occasion. I'm not going to say the organization's name. I don't want to give them recognition. But I want to make it clear that these were not Methodist. They were trying to intimidate all of the Methodists entering the stadium for the conference. But the way it was portrayed on television, it gave the impression that the people holding these hateful, hurtful signs were part of our denomination. If our denomination didn't look bad enough from the results of the conference, this just added salt to the wound. So as deficient as Methodists appeared to be this week, they were not involved in this very destructive activity that appeared on the news. 9 of us from Asbury attended the conference, and I want to thank the other 7 who journeyed to St. Louis with Sherry and me. These Asburyans were amazing worker bees for this congregation. You will be blessed for many, many, many years because of what they did at this conference. It was very advantageous to have so many ears listening to what was being said, proposed, debated, and voted upon. But more importantly is what these people did outside of the arena when we weren't in session. Some of the most important things that happened occurred in lobbies and in hotels and in restaurants, at meetings, at informal gatherings, and at worship services. Lance Wilhelm, Tim Burkett, Wayne Bland, and Randy Kennedy kept running into people they had met at previous progressive events and conferences. Who are they hugging now, I wondered to myself. And so they were able to introduce me to all kinds of people I would have never met and connected with. What a blessing. Cale Hall, who is a seminary student at Candler, he was all over the place, and he helped relay to us the perspective of the seminary students and the professors who attended the conference. Our co-youth director, Chris Kincaid, who has entertained thoughts of seminary, was able to connect with seminary students, professors, and even a very progressive bishop. Janet Wagner, our new church council chair, was constantly gathering information to help us take the next steps in whatever direction we go. And Sherry and I just got to bask in all of the good work and energy these 7 individuals exhibited in St. Louis. I was ecstatic that they all got to meet our friend and incredible musician Mark Miller, who has written so much of the music we experience here at Asbury. In fact, the song the choir sang today for our offertory was a song Mark specifically wrote for this congregation. And the two songs the choir will sing during communion are also Mark's. I was excited they got to experience him leading a worship service, and afterwards he came and sat with us at our Asbury table. An evening with Mark Miller is always a blessing. And by the way, Mark wasn't feeling too well. He was a little under the weather, so guess who came to the rescue? Dr. Sherry and her essential oils. Mark said they worked. Sherry has one oil that is called Unity. And she tried sprinkling it all over the stadium where the session was held. She anointed it, but that didn't even help these Methodists. I'm glad our team of Asburyans were able to see that the majority of the Methodists attending and observing this conference were moderates and progressives. And that's one reason the results of the votes are so painful. The results do not reflect the theology of most Methodists in the United States. Unlike most denominations, we are a global church with voting delegates representing other countries. The delegates from Africa, Asia, and Russia make up 43% of the votes. In these countries, homosexuality is taboo. In some of these countries, it is even considered a criminal act. And so right off the bat, you're facing almost impossible odds with making progress, especially when you add in the votes of the Methodists in the United States, whose theology is more Southern Baptist than Wesleyan. Almost every time there was a vote regarding LGBTQ issues, the vote was around 55% against and 45% in favor. It's really remarkable that it was always that close when you consider that one side has a 43% advantage from the get-go. If the vote only involved the United States delegates, the more progressive views would easily have been selected, some say by two-thirds or by 70%. So unfortunately, our rules and regulations are shaped by a large percentage of people who do not use the Wesleyan quadrilateral of scripture, tradition, experience, and reason. In fact, I didn't hear the word quadrilateral mentioned once at this conference, which says a lot. Because of the quadrilateral, we were one of the very first denominations to ordain women way back in 1956, even though Paul in the Bible said women should not teach and should remain silent and submissive. And even though women were not one of the original 12 disciples, we Methodists felt it was not right and was unjust, and so we changed. But if the ordination of women had to be passed now, I don't think it would. Even though there are more moderates and progressives in the United States than biblical literalists, those fewer literalists, along with the 43% outside the United States who exist in patriarchal cultures, would probably make it a 55-45 vote again. In other words, the denomination has been thrown into reverse. One of the most painful things I witnessed was the plight of young seminarians who do not know what to do. Many of them are LGBTQ. Some had planned to graduate and start serving in churches Some were already serving churches. What are they to do? Where are they to go? Others were straight, but felt they could only serve in a denomination that fully embraces LGBTQ people. What are they to do? We may have just lost an entire generation of seminarians and young ministers. And then there was the Asian woman we saw at a worship service. We learned that she had been a brave, progressive voice overseas. As tears rolled down her cheeks and with a look of complete emptiness on her face, she now had to go back to her country without any kind of validation for her courage to face the persecution again. This was a very tough week. There was an article about the conference on the front of the Savannah Morning News yesterday. It was a pretty good article. The writer did a good job, but I wasn't crazy about the title, which was Business as Usual. The title maker apparently read the story and saw that Asbury is going to keep welcoming and keep being inclusive. And so he or she came up with business as usual. And so I understand what the title maker was trying to say, but it's not business as usual. It can't be business as usual because today is Transfiguration Sunday. Jesus takes three disciples up a mountain to pray. That's a biblical signal that something important is about to happen. Whenever someone in the Bible goes up a mountain, you know that something special is about to happen, usually something transformative. And Jesus takes his inner circle with him, Peter, James, John. And while they are praying, Jesus' clothes become dazzling white, and his face starts shining like the sun. It gets better. All of a sudden, appearing beside him are two people who have not walked the earth for hundreds of years, Elijah and Moses, and they start having a conversation with Jesus. Obsessive and compulsive Peter can't contain himself. He has to react. And before you know it, he says, "Lord, this is incredible. Let us stay here. I will build a place for each of you. One for you, one for Elijah, one for Moses." The text says, Peter did not know what he was saying. The adrenaline was flowing. He wasn't thinking clearly. And then a divine voice interrupts him and says, "This is my son whom I love. Listen to him." Stop and listen. And Jesus and the three disciples have this experience. And then Jesus and the disciples come down the mountain, but things are different now because Jesus knows it's time to go to Jerusalem. As one of the speakers told us in St. Louis this week, after this experience for Jesus, it was now Jerusalem or bust. Many of us are ready to come down the mountain. Many of us are ready to become the church we know we can and should be. Many of us are ready to go to Jerusalem. We can't wait, and I can't either. But like Peter, we first need to do some listening. Before we get a clear picture of what the vision is, we have a whole lot of listening to do. And of course, we first need to be listening to God. And like Peter, we need, as the psalm says, to be still. To be still in order to know God and to know God's voice. You see, I don't believe this all happened at this time of year by accident. This was a God thing. What better day for the first Sunday after General Conference to be Transfiguration Sunday? And what better time for us all to be listening to God and to the movement of God's Spirit than the season of Lent that starts Wednesday? Every Wednesday during Lent, we will continue our tradition of Tazeh services where we spend a lot of time listening. Listening to Scripture, spending time in silence, and experiencing deeply spiritual music. Come on Wednesday evenings and listen. And how wonderful is the timing of the film about Howard Thurman, who stressed the importance of centering prayer. He called it the great silence. He said, "This is where we find God and wholeness." He wrote, "Thou art made for wholeness, body, mind, spirit, one creative synthesis, moving in perfect harmony within, without, with fellow man and nature all around, to make heaven where hell is found." We also need to listen to each other, and especially to those who are hurting, who are terribly wounded, who have had memories of rejection stirred up. Or you may be hurting for someone else, for your children, or for friends who are LGBTQ. If you are one of those hurting people, and you need to talk and want to talk about it, and a lot of us do, please go to the Connection Corner today. Lance Wilhelm will be there and will take your name and your contact information so we can contact you. We will be forming listening groups. This is not to plan for what we do next, but to let people express themselves and to have people listen to them and let them know they are loved. If for some reason you don't want to do this with a group, but would rather speak with me or with one of our other clergy persons, that's fine too. Just let us know. Or you can do both. So if you want to be part of this, please go to the Connection Corner today and see Lance during coffee hour. We also need to listen to our bishop and our district superintendent. I believe Bishop Brian and Reverend David Thompson are really good people who are in difficult positions. I believe they are people who will respect our decision and do all they can to help us, whether it is to remain in the denomination or to leave the denomination if we feel it is of God. But we certainly need to be open to listening to them and how God is moving in their lives too. And by the way, the bishop invites everyone to attend an important meeting this coming Saturday. It's in Tifton, Georgia, so I'm sorry it's so far away. It's a 3.5-hour drive. But it's a meeting about General Conference and our South Georgia Conference. Please know that you are invited. A number of us have already determined that we will be there. It starts at 1 o'clock. We'll send an email about this to everyone tonight. We also need to listen to those who have a different perspective than we do. And part of listening is being empathetic, trying to walk in other people's shoes. There's not a lot of that going around in our country or in our denomination. But this is how change and transformation happens. There was a very disturbing scene at the conference that those of you who watched the live stream did not get to see because the live stream wouldn't show it. After the one church plan did not pass, and after the traditional plan passed, and just before the conference wrapped up its three-day meeting, about 70 delegates or so who had been for the one church plan, many of whom wore rainbow stoles, moved to the center of the floor during the session and started singing Blessed Assurance, and shouting things like, "This is our church too." It was both painful to hear and inspiring to experience. In fact, many of us in the stands joined them in songs and in the chants. And as the chanting and singing grew stronger, the chair of the session called for a 15-minute break. And the more conservative delegates scattered, left the floor as the singing and chanting continued. But there was a group of about 30 African delegates who remained and started their own chanting and singing. They weren't singing with the other delegates. They started a song of celebration and victory, and they were trying their level best to drown out the laments and chants of the progressive group. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was quite horrible to look at and experience. As one of the progressive delegates would later say, it felt as though they were dancing on our graves. And from my vantage point, from way up top of the arena, it looked like the Sharks and the Jets before a rumble. I left the conference with some bitterness towards those African delegates who seemed to be reveling in their victory at the expense of others who had been hurt and harmed. But the last several days, I tried putting myself in their shoes. Their belief is that if the one church plan had passed, then it would have ended the Methodist Church in Africa. I don't know if that would have been true. I don't think it would have happened. But I know that is what many of them, most of them, believe would happen. And they could be right. For them, the church is not just a source of spirituality. It is a source for food and for water and for clothing and for shelter and medicine and education, for life itself. They believe that would have been gone, destroying many, many lives. And then you have the theological dimension. Since they tend to be fundamentalists who believe you only experience salvation through the understanding of Christ that they have, they believe people would be damned to hell for eternity if they don't experience Christ. So the survival of the church in Africa for them is not only a matter of giving them life in a practical way on earth, it's also a way for them to experience eternal life and not eternal damnation. And so our willingness to do something that could close the churches in Africa must seem to be for them to be a very callous, uncaring, even wicked thing to do. They could have very easily seen what the other delegates were doing as dancing on the graves of their people. So something has to change. When one side gets their way at the expense of others getting hurt, and hurt badly, something must be done differently. There's got to be a better way, and we are called to be part of the solution. We are called to be light and to find a better way. I don't know if that way is within our denomination or outside of it. I don't know if the way will be with other like-minded Methodist churches in the United States, which there are many, or if the way is as an independent church. But there is a way to life and to health and to wholeness, and we need to be open to all of the options and to be listening. There are others we need to listen to. In her book, Walking on Water, Madeline Lingle writes, "Here we are on the border of Christian mystery. We are not meant to be separated from those who have gone before us." And so, like Jesus, who had Elijah and Moses surrounding him and encouraging him, we need to remember that we are not alone. That we have a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, loving us, encouraging us, offering us courage and wisdom. Remember, we are not human beings searching for a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And so John Wesley is here in spirit. Francis Asbury is sitting right beside you. And they are saying, "Don't fear. Don't you know that Methodism itself was a product of the same thing you're going through now? A reformation." Methodism, they would say, was actually a reformation of the reformation. "Don't you know that this is how wonderful things happen and new life begins?" And we need to listen to the past saints of Asbury who are here with us in spirit in her nasal twang. Can't you hear nasal Nell Hagen saying, "Don't y'all remember? We were down to 25 people with Gene Stewart, Stewart being our youngest member at 66. Don't you think if God has taken you this far, God will get you to where you need to go? Come on, Asbury." Janice Gant is here saying, "Keep rocking, Asbury." Francis Brannan is here saying, "As an old geezer, I showed you all how to think out of the box. Now go forth, Asbury, and think out of the box." Dix Elliott, in that gruff-sounding voice of his, saying, "Hey, I was at the Stonewall riots in 1969. I was right in the middle of it. We've come a long way, baby. Keep going, Asbury." Chris Wilburn, Harold and Louise Wiley, Joe Honeycutt, Jack Davenport, Gladys Bell, Phil Hunter, Lyra Upchurch, Emmeline Cooper, Thurman Butcher, Bob Carlisle, Mary Heinle, Michael Terry, they're all here, especially today. Listen to them. And we need to listen to those family members and friends and mentors of ours who loved us and cared for us and who are here with us in spirit. One of mine is Arthur Caliandro, my former boss who pastored at Marble Collegiate Church in New York. He's saying, "Keep the faith." That was one of his favorite phrases. Keep the faith. He's saying, "Listen, Billy, I had to follow in the footsteps of Norman Vincent Peale, who pastored at that church for 52 years. Can you imagine what that was like? It was so bad, I had to have quadruple bypass heart surgery the first year." No kidding. This is nothing, Billy. You got it. Keep the faith. Who are the cloud of witnesses in your life that you can call on to give you wisdom and courage? Use them. They're here waiting for you to call on them, waiting on you to listen to them. You are not alone. Not at all. Not just with this issue, but with all your issues in life. So it's too early to be making final decisions about the future, but it's certainly not too early to be excited about God creating something new. It's not too early to be climbing up the mountain to listen and to experience God's vision. And finally, Ray Ellis reminded me that there is one other deep thinker we need to listen to. We need to listen to the words of that great green theologian, Kermit the Frog, who said, "Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide." So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see, because someday we'll find it. The rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Who said that every wish would be heard and answered when wished on the morning star? Somebody thought of that, and someone believed it, and look what it's done so far. What's so amazing that keeps us stargazing? And what do we think we might see? Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Have you been half asleep? And have you heard voices? We've heard them calling our name. Is this the sweet sound that called the young sailors? The voice might be one and the same. I've heard it too many times to ignore it. It's something that we're supposed to be. Someday we'll find it. The rainbow connection. The lovers, the dreamers.